I was on shift recently, and the opportunity to talk about the risks of fluoroquinolones came up. A learner and I discussed the side effects, black box warnings, and alternative medication. I thought my teaching points were well received. Fast forward a few hours, and the learner presented another patient and recommended treatment with the fluoroquinolone when the patient had relative contraindications. Clearly, my previous teaching was ineffective. Welcome to another episode of MedEd Soundbites. I'm Brian Millman, EM faculty at UT Southwestern, and today I'm here with Dr. Christina Shenvey, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at University of North Carolina, who is an expert educator. We are going to be talking about strategies to improve retention. What's the problem that this podcast will help our listeners solve?
Thanks, Brian. Well, you hit the nail on the head that sometimes what we think we are teaching is not actually what the learner is learning. And that can be from a number of different reasons. Maybe it's how we deliver it. Maybe it's they weren't focused in the moment or they didn't connect it to something that would help them solve a problem. But for whatever reason, there's a disconnect. And sometimes that information can go in one ear and out the other. I think about the Krebs cycle. It's called a cycle because you learn it and forget it and learn it and forget it. And you don't actually retain that information unless you really need to. If you're a geneticist, et cetera, and you really need that information, then you retain it. So to make the most of our educational time, whether that's on shift or in the classroom, there are a number of things that we can do both as the teacher and as the learner to make our learning more effective.
What are those things that we can do? What are the keys to this?
Well, the first key or idea is that of desirable difficulty. And the idea here is that passive learning, things like just reading or just watching or just being told something, are often necessary to get a first pass of the information, but they're not really high yield in terms of making it stick over time. And in fact, studies have shown that just reading something twice or three times or four times is less effective than reading it or being told it once and then being tested on it later. But this idea of desirable difficulty is to tune the information to the level that is appropriate to the learner. And sometimes this requires probing until you find their gaps. So if you're teaching a medical student versus a PGY1 versus a PGY3, it should be very different because if you teach the same thing, the med student's going to be overwhelmed, the PGY3 will be bored. So it needs to be very individualized. And you need to probe to where is their edge? Where is the edge of their current knowledge so that then you can expand that edge a little bit? You can also help scaffold them to give them enough support, but not too much support. For PGY1, if they're doing their first central line, I'm going to scaffold heavily. So I'm going to provide a lot of support to keep that their building upright. So I might be in with them doing a central line, gowned and gloved, so that I can really support them. But then as they gain more independence, I want it to always be at the edge of what they're capable of. So I will withdraw some of that support until at some point they're doing it independently. The other key here of desirable difficulty is making it active. Passive mechanisms of just being told things, watching things, reading things are necessary but not sufficient. And instead, using more active and engaging methods will help make it stick.
I think it's so important to take an individualized approach to each learner, and this is a really great way of doing that. One of the advantages of teaching adult learners is they bring so much experience with them. How can we lean on this?
Yes, we are teaching, for the most part, adult learners who maybe if you're trying to teach them about fluoroquinolones, well, instead of just telling them, hey, these are the black box warning, these are the contraindications, ask them about what's your experience been with fluoroquinolones? Where have you used them? Where have they been effective? Or what are the patients that you might think twice about a fluoroquinolone in? That now all of a sudden puts them in a thinking mode and them in a speaking mode. There's a book by Gail Rice on education. The name escapes me. I think it's called Hitting Pause. But one of the quotes that always stuck with me from that book is the person doing the talking is the person doing the learning. So if I can get that resident to talk more and engage more actively and discuss it, now they're thinking about maybe a patient who's on Coumadin. There's an example of somebody I might not want to prescribe a fluoroquinolone for. Great. Now we can build on that. So taking their experience, and also you mentioned them being adult learners, well, what problem will this help them solve? You don't want to just memorize facts about fluoroquinolones in order to answer a multiple choice test question. Maybe around the time of their in-service exam, that's a strong motivator, but for the most part, they're motivated by how can I use this information to take good care of a patient on shift. So tying it into that thing that they care about, the what's in it for them, and having them bring information forward from their experience and then building on that, having them solve a problem. All right, let's think about what are three patients that you would definitely not want to use a fluoroquinolone, making it a problem that they are then solving rather than a set of facts that you are delivering to them. What another quote that I love from Benjamin Franklin is, tell me and I forget. Teach me and I may remember, involve me and I learn. So really actively involving them is key.
Really great quotes. And I'm so appreciative that you're sticking with my fluoroquinolone example, because this is really great feedback for me. Pimping has such negative connotations for many of us, but questions are a really important way of engaging and assessing a learner. How can we use questioning effectively?
Yes, this is key. And first, I'll talk a little bit about why questioning is important. And this has to do with what's called retrieval practice, or it's called the testing effect. And I mentioned the study of where if you read something once and then get tested on it versus reading it twice, you recall it much better in a week. So using questions can be a powerful way of retrieval practice. Maybe you see that resident again in a week or two and you say, all right, let's review fluoroquinolones. What do you recall from what we talked about? Also, this is a way to engage them and get them talking and thinking about problem solving. But there is a nuance between what is questioning in a way that develops trust and develops expertise versus what is pimping. And you could ask basically that same question of, what are three patients you wouldn't want to use a fluoroquinolone on? And it could be pimping, or it could be really good teaching. And what is the difference? In my mind, there's several differences. One big one is psychological safety, meaning, have you created an environment where it's okay to not know things? And you can do this by modeling, by saying, I don't know that either. Let's look it up and try to figure it out before the end of the shift. Have you created an environment where it's clear to the learner that they belong? That if they get this question wrong, you are not going to think worse of them. You're not going to ostracize them. You're not going to bring it up in your mind every time you see them. Oh, that was the resident who didn't know how to use fluoroquinolone. So have you created a sense of both high expectations of, here, we want you to do well. We want you to know the right thing. We want you to be great doctors. And a sense of belonging, that you belong here. We don't expect you to know everything. We have a spirit of shared inquiry. None of us knows everything all the time. And so to me, that's a big differentiator between that same question that could be pimping and could be great teaching. A second big differentiator in my mind is intent. What is the intent of you asking the question? Is the intent to shame the resident or learner? Or is it to show how much more you know than the resident or learner? Or is the intent to help engage them and bring them in and help them start to problem solve in their own mind so that they then learn the material better? So we want to avoid pimping. And the way that we can do that is by making sure that the intention is good and by creating that psychological safety. Once you have those pieces, asking questions or having them recall something that you talked about on a prior shift, that's like giving a booster shot for the information. Because whenever we learn something, then if we don't encounter it for a while, we start to forget. And so the way that we can help put that into our long-term memories is by encountering it again. So every time you see it again, it's like a booster shot until eventually at some point it goes into your long-term memory more solidly. So keeping that in mind of, is this pimping versus is this good teaching? Those are some key points.
That feeds into our next topic really well. Spaced repetition is an incredibly effective learning technique. It's really easy to implement in didactics or question banks, but what does spaced repetition look like at the bedside?
Great point. So it's easier if you're in a classroom or didactic setting to say, hey, we're going to have a monthly review of the content that we did. We're going to have a quiz or we're going to have a game. Or if you're on your own, you can make flashcards or go through questions that you got wrong on your question bank as a way of spaced repetition. In the clinical setting, it's a little bit harder, but you can. It takes more work to, for example, remember, oh, with this resident John, we had talked about hyperkalemia. Next time I see John, maybe I'll bring up hyperkalemia and try to take it now to the next level. Maybe we talked about hyperkalemia, but maybe we'll talk about what to do with a coding hyperkalemic patient or what to do in an austere environment. So you can try to remember what you talked with different residents Or you can ask them, hey, what did we talk about on our last shift together, if you don't remember? And then try to have them articulate, okay, what do you remember from what we talked about? And that, again, gives them a chance to do that retrieval practice. It's built in spaced repetition and doesn't rely on you to recall each time. Now, if neither of you remember, then maybe you want to keep a little running list of this is the date, this is the person I worked with, this is what we talked about. And then next time you work with that person, you can easily pull that up on your notes on your phone or an email draft or wherever you like to keep things that you want to get to easily, and then pick up kind of where you left off.
Many curricula take a systems-based approach and focus on cardiology for a month and then trauma for a month, but patients never present in that fashion to the emergency department. And we all really love the variety. How can we take advantage of the variety when it comes to learning?
The ED is great for this in terms of every single shift, you're going to see somebody with chest pain or abdominal pain. You're going to have to interpret an EKG. And this is called interleaving in terms of our learning versus the contrary would be massed practice. Mass practice would be, for example, I do all my peds in January and then I won't see another kid for 11 months, or we do all our EKG learning in February and then you're not going to see another EKG teaching until next February. And we learn better when we interleave the material. I like to think about it like exercising. If I go to the gym and all January I do biceps, all February triceps, March quads, April hamstrings, and that's all I do those months, by the end of the year, I'm not really going to be in overall better shape than when I started, per se. Instead, I want to interleave. Every Monday is leg day. Tuesday is bicep and back day. Thursday is push day, whatever it is. Cardio somewhere in there. And by interleaving, then overall, yes, I am getting better. So it kind of brings together the spaced repetition and wanting to see things multiple times. So we can use that in our curricula by building in key touch points for important areas that we need interleaving in, like EKGs or PEDS. But then in the ED, we're fortunate that we see all different things every day.
Another place that I think interleaving can be utilized really well in the emergency department is with patients presenting with the same chief complaint, but different presentations or different diagnoses. So a respiratory patient that we're thinking a PE on versus a respiratory patient that we're thinking about volume overload, and talking about some of those differences between one diagnosis versus the other within the same chief complaint.
Yes, that's a great example of a way to bring in interleaving. Maybe it's clear the patient has fluid overload, but then you could say, well, how do we know it's not a PE? And so you can bring in the idea of a PE, even if you don't have a patient with a PE.
So far, we've talked about desirable difficulty, active learning, retrieval practice, spaced repetition, and interleaving. What are some other strategies we can utilize to help information stick?
Well, another example is what's called elaboration. And this is going beyond the current case. So for example, let's take that hyperkalemic patient. Maybe their potassium is 6.5. So you can talk about, okay, how are we going to manage this patient? But then elaboration would be going beyond that to say, how would you handle it if the potassium were 8? How would you handle it if they were developing a sine wave? How would you handle it if they were coding? How would it change if they're a dialysis patient versus not a dialysis patient? How would you handle it in a different environment or with different resources? What if you don't have dialysis? What if you do? So going beyond those, or let's say you're taking care of this volume overload shortness of breath patient. How would you handle this if this were on an airplane? Take it to a totally different context to now you've had that learning and preparation that goes way beyond just that one patient with a potassium of 6.5. Another concept is called generation. This I like to think about for procedures. So let's say we are going to do a shoulder reduction. Then before telling them how to do it, ask how they would do it. That then brings online, well, this has been my experience. This is how I've tried it before that they can walk through. Or maybe they've never done it before. Maybe they're doing their first chest tube. And so instead of telling them, here's what to do, have them try to solve it first. And chances are they've learned something about a chest tube before, so they can bring that knowledge online. But by having them problem solve, then it helps them learn better. Then, whereas if I tell them, all right, you're going to get these supplies, you're going to prep, you're going to drape, lidocaine incision here, having them work through it, then they may realize, oh, shoot, I need to get the lidocaine before I prep and drape so that I have that in my sterile field. Right? Or I need to make sure that I have my strips of tape ready, those annoying strips of silk tape that you're going to need to make the seal. I've got to put those ready somewhere where I can reach them beforehand Otherwise, I'm going to be there gloved and gowned and not able to get my tape. So having them talk through it first, before they even know all the steps, then you can fill in, oh, here, don't forget, you're going to need this supply or you're going to need this prepared. And then finally, contextualizing. We are wired to remember stories and we remember things well in context. So if you're in the ED, you can talk about, like, I had a patient in bed 8 who presented with this. And you can then relate that teaching pearl to that specific case. So by contextualizing when you are teaching, making it feel really real, this patient came into bed 2. They were being coded on the EMS gurney. We did this or that. Contextualizing your teaching, turning it into a story, allows us to remember it better.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shenvey. You talked about some of my favorite strategies for both my own learning and when working with learners. And you also talked about some of the strategies that I was less familiar with, but gave very applicable situations where these methods can be applied on shift. I really appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, Brian. It's a pleasure.